Strike a Chord Podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakabu.
Hey everyone, welcome to Strike a Chord. We have the wonderful Kate Taylor here. Kate is a singer-songwriter, indie folk musician. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you.
Thanks, you missed out one thing: award-winning.
Oh, let's do it again. Yeah.
No, we don't have to do it again. Just go with the
flow.
That's it. That was at the Muldoon Festival.
Yeah, the Muldoon Folk Festival.
Yeah. You got the award for.
So it's the Roddy Reed song competition.
Yes.
And so I entered two songs and then, one of them got shortlisted. So fantastic. I went along and sang and won.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, welcome. Welcome to Strike a Chord. It was good about to open up the the episode. Folk, how, why?
Ooh, why folk? Why folk?
Yeah.
It just kind of happened very naturally. I don't think I ever sort of had thought of myself in a particular genre, for a long, long time with my songs.
Yep.
They were just sort of indie, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah, but the more I started performing, and I think also then the people that I was meeting, I sort of just slowly got influenced to go with folk. And then I guess I realised that a lot of the stuff I was listening to was probably more folk.
Yeah, so we're both just talking about your album. Was that released, it was in during lockdown, was it?
Yeah, it was so released just before lockdown, and then I did the launch on the 20th of March. So, and then 1 week later, we had our first ever lockdown. So I was really lucky. I mean, unlucky, lucky, because at least I got to do the launch, which.
And you actually got to have people at your event. Oh, my goodness.
That was good.
Oh, wow. Yeah. They were listening to, I didn't realize it was right before the lockdown.
Yeah.
What a great time to release an album.
Yeah.
But on saying that, we're both listening to the album and we both liked, I loved it. There were some really haunting lyrics and instrumentations, and I really loved there was some mandolin. So beautiful. Mm. But in particular, I really liked Dawn Skies, and I'd love for you to talk about the lyrics of that particular one and even just about how you create your lyrics, because it felt very personal. And I loved how you said we are the weather. It's just very, very powerful.
I think for a long time there I found it really hard to not write a song that came back to the environment, because it just was on my mind all the time. I feel like I've kind of got it out of my system a bit now, or else, I don't know, it's such a big topic, isn't it? It's kind of hard to escape it. But, so a lot of my songs were, going down that kind of vein. But also, that particular song, it starts off on the beach with my kids. And, I was just kind of observing them in the water and thinking how beautiful it was. So there was, I suppose I was kind of putting it in different phases, that kind of innocence and playfulness and they were so young, they didn't know, they hadn't thought about the environment and which was nice. So I started it off with that, but then I moved the next verse into thinking about, what we're doing to the planet and then the last verse just brings it back to the garden, because that's kind of for me where I find a lot of therapeutic value in the garden.
I think we all do. We all like walking on grass and
shoes,
being those shoes and getting into the veggie patch. Well, I do anyway. When you're thinking of these lyrics and of these profound words, do you have a melody in your head, or is it just the lyrics that are coming out and you think, well, I'll figure out a melody later? Or is that something that's in the back of your head?
No? Yeah, I almost always start with the melody.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, the melody comes first, because usually I'm just kind of picking the guitar up and then just playing, and then it's like, oh, that's nice. And then I get a melody and then I start humming something and
I think that's a common thing. Especially if you can play an instrument.
Yeah.
And if you've got an instrument in your hand, it's like the melody comes in first, and then you think, oh, maybe I can write lyrics to this, whereas poets will just put the lyrics out first and say, well, I'll give it to a musician now, or they can figure out a melody. But that's usually a common way, common approach. I don't write lyrics, I write music. So for me, it's just the music, and then That's it for me. I just give it to someone and.
And they put lyrics they put to it? Lyrics,
yeah, okay. If they can.
Yeah.
If they can't, well, it's back to the drawing board. But Red Dirt is really well produced. What was your, I suppose, what was your idea around the instrumentation? Did you have an idea of thinking, oh, I want an acoustic guitar here and one there? Because you've got some harmonica in there as well and it sounds great, right?
Yeah.
What was your take, or was it only you, or did you get some ideas from the other musicians? How did that all pan out?
I think I knew I wanted particular instruments on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the feeling mandolin was going to work on a couple of things, but I didn't know how well. Like when I heard it back, and I think it was on Dawn Skies, it was like, oh my God, I love mandolin. Like I really fell in love with mandolin after that song. I didn't have, I think probably the sound engineer I was working with, Andrew Robinson, he probably was suggesting stuff along the way as well. But I knew I wanted drums and bass, but not on everything as well.
It's really, really well produced, and congratulations. It's a really nice album. It's something that, you know, the one thing that I love about it is that you sing in an Australian accent.
Mm.
I love that. Yeah. It's not, you know, you're singing it as it's supposed to be, you know. Yeah. It's not, now you get some singers that sing that American accent and stuff, but you listen to it and, you know, this is Australian.
Yeah.
You know, it's here.
Mm.
And that's what I love. That's what I, the first thing that I heard was, all right, the music was good, but when you started singing, it was like, yeah.
Well, that's nice feedback. And I actually do hear that from time to time.
Yeah.
Like the guitarist also that I play with, Greg Hamilton, who's on that. Yeah, he always says, I love the accents, keep the accent. And
I think it's very important. I think it's very important to keep that authenticity because you're here, you're in this great land, and I think it's very important to portray that, along with your, you know, your profound lyrics and the connection between, you know, the land and everything, because it's really there. Yeah. So I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, recording and everything like that, sometimes you like to change things, but I think sometimes you just record the way you feel and get it out there. And I think you've done just that in that recording. I think I can sort of like sense you singing it the same on the recording as you'll sing it in front of two or three people, you know, or even 1,000 or 1,000,000 people. I can sense that it's the same thing, same feeling that you get, which is great, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. How long have you been in the industry for? How long have you been playing?
I had a go at it and then I disappeared for a couple of decades. So yeah, I sort of, like, I started off busking in my teens and then was in a duo and then a band in my early 20s.
Yep.
And then when I was about 24, I think, I quit the band and sold all my equipment. And I was at uni doing music.
Yeah.
I went to uni to study music. And then I had to pick a minor subject as well, and I picked Italian. And I ended up getting obsessed with Italian.
Oh, really?
And, like, the workload for the two, for music and the language, was really, you know, quite heavy. Yeah. So I ended up dropping music. I was like, I don't know.
Did you at least learn Italian?
I did. I had learned Italian. I stuck with it.
Yeah, it's sometimes that happens. I know I was in a period where I sold all my recording equipment.
Oh.
And I went to live overseas for a bit, and then I came back and I thought, maybe I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah,
but you needed the cash. You need the cash to go overseas and to do all of that stuff. So
well, was it just short lived though for you?
It was. I was overseas for a year.
Oh, okay. So when you came back,
I came back, it was like I was in a different state of mind, but the recording was always there. Like I had bought. I actually my first sort of like experience with recording was me taking out a loan and buying equipment and building my first recording studio in my parents' garage.
Yeah.
You know, with all the divided walls and everything like that. And I purchased then what they called it ADAT, the first digital system that came out, and cost me a lot of money. It's like, I did a few recordings and I made the money from it, but it just came to the point where I had to leave the country and sell everything.
Yeah.
And now if I had that, it'll be worth a bit, but what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing that you said, you know, sell up and then you think and then you come back to it and you think.
Yeah.
I think you come back with a bigger love.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Totally. Yeah, that's interesting actually.
Life experience. You mature. As well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, no, definitely came back with like massive passion for it. But also the songwriting didn't ever completely stop. Like I kind of kept that up. I just didn't play with other people.
I think maybe that's what kept you. That's the songwriting is what kept you in it. If you did, if you stopped songwriting, you probably would have severed all ties.
Maybe.
But it's good that you didn't stop.
Mm.
You've got a band at the moment, or what? What is your?
It's kind of a duo slash trio, depending on who. Actually, we've never performed as a trio. Oh no, we have once.
Oh really?
But yeah, but we rehearse as a trio.
Oh,
yeah. And then every gig I get, it's like one of them is not available. It's like what?
So, really?
Yeah.
I've only seen a duo version of your performance. Yeah. That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah. You would have seen me with Greg or with
Matt.
What is the trio? What's the instrumentation?
So Greg plays guitar and does backing vocals, and Matt plays violin.
Ah, nice. You can always have one or the other, right? Ideally, you have the three, but you can have one or the other. It works. I noticed that you've done a few gigs here in Melbourne, and how does every gig differ? Because usually when I do gigs, my approach and sometimes my set list changes depending on where you play. Now you've got your set list and it's pretty much all original, how do you determine what you're going to play at what venue?
Like if I'm playing at a folk club, then I try to get the ones that have got, you know, a good story.
Yep.
And there's a couple that they can join in on, but I haven't kind of done a lot of that, but I'm trying to do a little bit more of that for those occasions because, they love it, the kind of older crowd.
I like to be engaged, be involved.
But otherwise, like if it's just a small sort of intimate venue, then I actually love playing my quieter songs. So there's not a huge difference. I've got a few covers that I'll do. Like if it's, if I think there's a venue where it's kind of a bit more noise then I'll play a few Gillian Welsh songs and Red Dirt always finish with that one.
That's a good one. That's a good one to finish up on. Do you always play the guitar or do you sometimes leave the guitar and go out and sing?
No, I pretty much always play. Unless I'm like Greg's got a few songs that he's a songwriter as well. He's got beautiful stuff. So if we sing any of his, then I'll sometimes just sing my guitar.
Awesome. What was your growing up as a kid? Was there any musical background or how did you how'd you fall into music? Like, I know you studied it, but before that?
I suppose like I had a lot of older siblings that loved music. So there was, a bit of music in the house, like listening to music. But no, there's more writers in my family. Like my father was a poet.
There you go. That's where that gene comes in.
He encouraged that. Like when I was really little, 10, 11, and I was writing like a few little poems. He would, take interest in them and say, these are very good, darling. I was like, thanks. So that was nice.
And no one else had any musical.
And one sister after I was playing for a bit, she was a painter and then she kind of switched that up for music. So she's a musician.
Oh, fantastic. And do you guys perform together?
No, never. No, we've got really different taste.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And really different style.
I'm sure you can fuse something together.
Yeah. I think actually we've done one gig together.
It's interesting when you have when it's in the family and you have some sort of musical connection with a sibling or with a parent or or something like that. It's a different connection I think that you have within the family. It's a different conversation that you have. Rather than having your normal day-to-day conversation with a family member, it's good to have that that separation where you can go outside of the family circle and talk about music, or talk about the art, it's very interesting. I know you're into folk and Namla, you're into folk as well. How would you differentiate your music to Kate's?
That's so interesting. A few people have said, I guess the stuff I've been doing lately has folk elements in it, but I've always been a fan of Irish music, so that I don't know, that kind of the Celtic, folk. The traditional folk. Yeah. So, but my, I guess the difference in mine is I have electronic elements in mine, and less vocals and more instrumental kind of thing. But also, there's no guitars or anything like that. I guess mine's a blend. Whereas, but I love. It's funny, I haven't really been to gigs in the folk scene, but I've been going recently. I've been seeing you at a few of the gigs, and it's just there's something really warm and genuine about the music you hear in at the folk gigs, and it's very cozy. Like, I love the atmosphere. It's just very welcoming and intimate, and it's a nice change from, I don't know, like a gig where it's like not rock, that's the wrong example, but just the atmosphere of the music, because it's quite soft a lot of times and more heartfelt, and it's very lyric focused.
Yeah, so
different people dynamic.
Really yeah, people are really different dynamic. People are really listening to what you were saying. And a lot of the gigs I've gone to have been instrumental music gigs just based on my background, but it's really nice to listen to, actually open up my ears to lyrics a lot more now. And
that's an interesting thing that you say.
Well, you can, I'm sure you can relate.
I've never been into lyrics, you know. It's always the music that moves me. It's never been lyrics. I honestly, I don't remember a lyric of any song that I play. I'm really bad with remembering lyrics, but I can remember every melody, every chord, every little thing of every part of every instrument that's in there. So it's a funny thing. That's what really moves me. It's the melodies. It's that thing. If the lyrics are, you know, very common and they're, you know, I've heard them in different songs, then I'll probably remember them. Or if they're really profound, like yours, you know. But it's that. I think that's just how I've been all the time, and it's hard to change that habit.
Yeah, it's hard to change that. I feel like definitely going to a lot of the folk, the gigs from the folk scene has opened me up more to lyrics, and even living with Nina and hearing her sing, and I'm like, oh, there's lyrics.
Well, I was going to mention Nina, but that's a very mutual friend of both of yours. Am I correct?
Yeah, so she's on my album.
Yeah,
actually,
and you played on Nina's.
A little bit of backing vocals.
She's
backing vocals. That's right. Yeah.
She's great. Nina's great.
Yeah,
she's got really good energy, and she can actually play really well too. It's like she's there.
Yeah.
So, but it's a different dynamic. She's a different dynamic. You're a different dynamic. Does that complement? Does that work?
Yeah, it does. Like, you mean when she and I play
together? Yeah,
it does.
Even the recording.
And in the recording, I mean, she sang just so beautifully on the few that, you know, she sang on for me. But they are different style to hers.
You guys are totally different.
Yeah.
And that's why I asked the question.
She's really kind of like, she's kind of poppy folk.
That's a good way of putting it.
But,
She's I think she's the type of person that can fit in anywhere.
Yeah.
You know? That's a great asset to have.
Mm.
But as for, you know, being folk and everything like that, have you ever mixed with anyone, like have fused with any other sort of genre? Have you gone down that path with anyone else, or?
I suppose I did a little bit of jazz for a while. Like before I went to uni, I did a bit of jazz at it was called Preston TAFE then.
Remember
jazz
Preston
performance
TAFE.
And theory.
I remember Preston TAFE. That was a while ago.
So, and I loved it. Like, I loved all the stuff I was listening to and some of the stuff that we were singing. A bit of jazz. But that's probably all, really. Sort of touched on a little bit of blues.
Yeah, as you
stuff,
do.
But yeah.
As you do.
Yeah.
That's where jazz like originates from. Really.
Yeah.
Street music.
I mean, I wanted to ask back to the folk, like, who are your influences, like your go-to musicians of folk who have inspired you, or like
I suppose, like, in early days, Joni Mitchell was my number one. Like, that's, I just adored listening
common
to
one
stuff. Common one. But I also listen to some weird stuff, like the Angels and AC/DC and things like that. Like,
makes two of us.
I know, it's funny when I think about it now, but I loved it. And and I liked Van Morrison, Leonard Cohen, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez. So all those old sort of ones. And now, like, Gillian Welsh. Who else? and some local people like Julia Jacklin, I really love, and Angie McMahon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's gorgeous. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. No, like I can, again, like the folk world's new, not new, but like I haven't really seen a lot of live music from the folk world, and it is quite, like even with Nina, like there's so many sub, would I say subgenres within the folk?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
so many variations of the kind of folk that that's out there, which is really cool to experience because it's not something I thought about at all. And I guess
there's a lot of things that can be classed as folk.
Exactly. Yeah. So then it would be hard in a sense to not, I guess, to not just put it in that one category without going to see a few shows. Mm. And I guess with your music, would you say you're about to finish recording your upcoming album?
Yeah.
How would you say the music from this current album, would you say it's evolved in some sense or like in a different order?
I'm hoping it has. It's a bit early to say because, you know, like when you're really in the thick of it, it's kind of hard to have a clear perspective on it. But I hope it's evolved. And I think it's kind of gone a little bit country.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of the songs anyway have sort of definitely gone. And I've had to really try to not sing like that because, you know, you were talking before about the Australian accent.
Yep.
I found that I just wrote a couple of country songs accidentally. They just kind of came out. And it was really a strong country accent.
Didn't sound like Dolly Parton, did you?
It wasn't quite that extreme, but it's like, hang on, where's this come from? And I'm not sure if I'm gonna kind of keep it. So I've had to work to try to, you know, get back to my Australian accent on those two songs.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
But I've found that and talking to other people, it's very easy to go from folk to country.
Yeah. Yeah, they've really – well, like Gillian Welsh kind of really –
there's a fine line,
right?
Her,
but she's probably really country. But, she can be called folk as well. So there is a fine line.
There is a fine line. And I think all you have to do is just change up a couple of chord progressions.
Yeah.
And the lyrics are they're on the border as well, aren't they? So it doesn't take much.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much. But I think, depends on, you know, how traditional you want to be, you know. I think you can stick on this side of things or that side. But I think if you blend it a little bit, I think it makes it interesting.
Mm.
I think it makes it interesting.
Yeah.
How many tracks are on this new album?
Started with 10, but I'm not sure. I think
under 50?
No. Another way. No, I think it's going to maybe end up being 8.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because because I got drums and bass in on it. And on one of the songs it was kind of like it just feels like a really, really different song. So I'm just trying to adjust to that and think, hang on, you know, should I just, you know, let it go or just maybe it is a different song and leave it on. But
yeah, sometimes tough decisions.
Yeah.
With an album, I guess, whether you want it all to have that sound, like a particular sound or whether – and I guess the other option could be to have that song released as a single on its own later on.
Yeah, that's a possibility too.
And, which we've talked about, you can redo it after about a year later.
Mm. Yeah, we have talked about
it. Yeah, we have talked about that, where you can just get it and revamp it and just do a different spin on it or different – you can turn it into a country song, you know.
Mm.
I think that's the beauty of having your own songs too. You can – do with them as you please, you know, bastardize them if you want, but you can try those different genres and different experiments. So I think I think you got a point there where you might, you know, you can leave it as a single and just bring it as a single and you know, pop another one in there. But it's a tough decision because it's going out there. Once it's out there, it's out there.
A bonus track, a mystery track.
Yeah,
figure out how to get to hear this track. Have like a clue. Or something.
Choose your own adventure track.
Like just leave a few.
That's
little,
actually a good idea.
A trail.
I like that. That's a good idea. Well, there's a metal band, a progressive metal band, that actually they. The whole album is a story and all the songs are connected. After they do the next album, it has to connect from the first album from the same key, the same melody, the same song, and it has to connect from there and then go into a different album. And then it starts again on the other album and the album after that. Yeah, Symphony X, I think it is. So they actually, because it's a big epic sort of sound they've got. Really big. It's like soundtracks, you know. And when they start, and then you don't really notice the break between songs. So you listen to the whole album as one song.
Ah, okay.
And then when he finishes, but he finishes in a way where you expected for it this to continue, but it continues in the next album. So,
oh, God.
And mind you, sometimes there's a break in between albums, a year break, two-year break.
Wow. To be continued.
Yes, oh, because they had the tour and everything like that. Yeah. So they've been around for ages, though.
Is this with lyrics?
Lyrics and everything.
Okay, so there's stories.
Yeah,
and
but the music is quite big. They've got like a 7-piece group, but they've got, metal guitars and bass and synths and drums, and it's all this epic sort of thing. It's really interesting to actually listen to it because they do tell a story. Mm. And that's an interesting concept as well.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to sort of like delve into that a little bit, but it's big. It's big. You gotta have that mindset of, all right, this is what's happening, and I'm cutting it here.
Mm.
Wow. I'm saving that for the next album. Mm. And it keeps their fans on edge.
It's quite complicated, though.
It is complicated.
I mean, because especially if you take a year break and then come back to it, and
you gotta start off from where you left off.
You might not be feeling that particular.
Yeah.
But are they doing other projects as well? As that one. Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing other projects.
Restricted, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, they tour as well. So that takes a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
But I think some of them have different projects in different bands and, but it's an interesting concept, isn't it?
Mm.
It's something that, not every band does.
Mm.
And then you got sort of like bands that are instrumental bands, solely instrumental, and they have these long, long pieces.
Mm.
And then they want to do that as well, but there's no lyrics, so the journey is all instrumental. So you need to really listen for it. You have to be a bit of an aficionado. It's not your average Joe won't probably listen to it, not to a 15.5-minute track where it's just all guitars and synths and everything's going berserk. But I think that's probably a concept to visit. I think that's especially with your songs, I think that might be a possibility because you got such a good storyline in your songs, and you can actually, especially with your lyrics. You can have a story and have a theme in one album and then take over from that and talk to the people about it. Not just play it, but talk to it, and just evolve from that, sort of give them the journey that, this is not over yet.
Yeah.
Next album.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
It's a really interesting idea.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I love hearing what people like, those sort of creative approaches that are really different and
out of the box. Yeah, a bit left of center.
Yeah. Do you know Martha Marlowe? She's based in Sydney.
No.
Yeah. Oh, she's the most divine. Like, she's probably the closest thing on her. Not really Joni Mitchell, but she's been influenced by Joni Mitchell and Laura Marling, and you can hear that in her own music, and she's just beautiful. But her next album is based on characters that she's created. Each song is about a different character, and then they sort of end up connecting throughout the songs.
It's like a novel.
It is.
That's cool.
Yeah, but it sounds really gorgeous. Oh. Like, and she just, the last time I saw her perform was at the Melbourne Recital Centre, and she just talked a little bit. She sort of introduced the characters to sort of give you a little teaser of, what's going to be coming next.
That's such a great concept.
It was such a great idea.
Yeah. That's where I think where music goes is that next level.
Mm.
It's like, all right, we know in a song, especially the country songs, someone's left someone, taken the dog as well and all of that. Yeah. But I think that next level is telling that bigger story, that taking you on a journey. And if you're that person that listens to songs because of their lyrics and their words, I think that is something to sort of like absorb and enjoy.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a lover of music, but enjoy the story, enjoy the journey, And I think that's a very important part if you're a songwriter.
Mm.
If you can come up with something like that, that's genius.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. But always been a Melbournean?
Mm, yeah.
Born and bred here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you gone overseas, or have you done any sort of music overseas or anything like that?
No, but I've been overseas traveling and stuff, but I haven't done music overseas. But when I first went to TAFE, that was because I was on a trip in Europe And I caught a train from Copenhagen to, I can't remember Berlin maybe, but and on the train I just got singing with a few people, and okay. they were like, oh, you should be doing this. And anyway, it ended up really inspiring me to do it. And then when I got to Athens, I ended up doing a bit of busking at the Acropolis, okay. and it was like, I haven't performed or,
so
you know.
Did you end up going to Italy? Because
yeah,
you did,
yeah,
because yes. you did learn.
Yeah,
to go to Italy.
Definitely. So that sort of reignited, like I came back from that. Came back and then did the jazz performance and theory course at Preston. Yeah.
You probably would have done the same one that I did. I did it in Greensboro.
Yeah.
I think there was Heidelberg, Preston, and Greensboro back then. Mm. I think that would have been the same sort of
music course.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. I think there was a jazz popular course, and then there was a pop, and I think there was some other sort of courses. Mm. There weren't any bachelors. There was all certificates.
Yeah.
Advanced certificates and stuff. Yeah. There wasn't like you now, like you haven't done your bachelors and stuff. That didn't exist then. But I remember I did my AMEB, and then I wanted to study jazz. And this is after I came back from studying overseas and living overseas.
Where were you living?
I lived in Spain for a bit because I'm a flamenco guitarist. I came back and I thought, what can I do next? Mm. So how can I, develop? Yeah. So I went and did the jazz course. Mm. But it wasn't a lot of jazz. It was a lot of pop.
Okay.
I was there with a lot of younger people. Mm. They wanted to, be pop stars.
Yeah.
So it was a different sort of thing. So, I did that and learned a little bit, but it wasn't that jazzy. I think if you're going to get into any genre, I think you really need to get into the roots of it. And I think, it's hard to go into a course that offers this, and concentrate on what you want to do. Mm. I found that it wasn't really what I was expecting, because I was expecting a lot more jazz.
Mm.
There wasn't a lot, because pop is pop.
Yeah.
Right? So there was a lot more young people wanting to do pop, and then you're in these.
Oh, what a pity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when I was at the Preston campus, it was all jazz.
It was, yeah. I think it was a different. Yeah. It was a different iteration when I went to the Greensboro one. But I think it was probably a good time then because it was like jazz, like proper jazz.
And it probably depended on the teachers too, perhaps.
Yeah, it did. But although the teachers were great because a lot of them were jazz musicians.
Oh, okay. Mm.
But they were also teaching how to survive in the real world as a musician.
Yeah.
So, which was a good thing, and that's what I liked, because they taught people how, well, I already knew because I was a pretty performing musician, but they taught the kids how to prepare before you go to a gig, make sure that you got your charts, make sure that you got your address, make sure that you got, it wasn't just about music, but make sure you got, transport, you've got, reliable transport, reliable equipment with you, extra cables, extra this, and just showing them, telling them how it is out in the real world.
The practicality.
Yeah. So it was a good course based on that, but there's some really good musicians and teachers. I think the way I saw it, I think they were a bit restricted in what they wanted to teach as
curriculum.
By the curriculum.
Limited.
You wouldn't know.
Yes.
You wouldn't know.
I won't say anything.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you wouldn't know. But I think, and that's why I wasn't really happy with that, with the outcome. But I got to meet a lot of people, though. Meet some really, really nice people, really, really good people, really good musicians as well. I think that was, if anything, the network is probably the most important.
I want to hear you play now.
Oh, he's pretty pretty insanely good.
we might play together one day, you never know. And make a bit of a fusion of folk and flamenco and
flamenco. I can't say it without becoming a tongue twister.
Flamenco
flow country.
Flamenco country.
That's a bit
long. Bit of a tongue twister.
Flamenco. Folk Menko. Right.
You gotta be really careful when you're saying that. Gotta be really careful when you're saying that.
Oh, does it sound like
this is Spanish.
No, it's Australian.
Oh.
Folk Menko, but you gotta be really really cautious about
that. I don't get it, but I'll take that.
Anyway.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yes. but we should, this is what we're actually with Amla, we're talking about, you know, getting a night together, or maybe a regular sort of thing as part of the podcast.
Mm.
I'm presenting as part of the podcast, getting different people in to do like an improv night.
Oh, wow.
And getting different people or different musicians or different genres in Melbourne just coming up and, you know, hanging out and just jumping on stage as they see fit, as they feel comfortable.
Mm.
And then just seeing what happens on stage.
Mm.
I'm sure there's a lot of magic that can happen, especially with good musicians. So it doesn't matter what genre. Mm. So this is
no rules.
Yeah, no rules.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
We were talking about that.
And just see what happens.
Just talking about before you came, about possibly organizing and talking about venues where we could probably stage this.
Yeah. And I just I forgot to even think about singer songwriters in that lineup, but could literally just get someone as yourself or like other singer songwriters to have a go at creating lyrics on the spot. Yeah,
that's fun. Yeah.
Or even
Well, I do it just with Greg sometimes when we're mucking around. We just end up writing, and it's you always like, I wish I'd hit record because you just can't get it back again. But
we have to make sure we record that night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, we want to do it as part of the podcast and having that episode live. Yeah, so, but it's an idea, idea that can probably come to fruition. There's a lot of venues in Melbourne, a lot of musicians. And I think it'll be great just to see. You know, I'd like to be just a person watching.
Listening. I'd like to be participant in the audience.
Yeah.
We might need to start it off because I think people are not gonna know what's going on. They're going to be a bit apprehensive of what's going on. Yeah. So, it'll be a great thing to see and a great thing to actually put out there in Melbourne and have other people come in and help the musicians with, you know, a bit of exposure and tell Melbourne that, you know, we've got an array of different genres and musicians to go with it. So, we've been talking about this in the last few episodes now as well. So,
We've got to actually do it.
Yeah,
we're heading towards that. We haven't committed yet, but we're heading towards it and trying to get a venue that'll give us the venue for free.
preferably.
And you know, just to see how things pan out, and if it's a good thing, maybe we do it on a regular basis, monthly or even quarterly. Finesse the flow of it. You like to use that quote.
It's just a word, a phrase. You know, when you've got a catchphrase.
Yeah.
So we're trying to throw it into every episode.
Really? Okay.
That's why it didn't quite work in that sentence. So I just threw it in because I realised I haven't said
it yet.
Yeah.
Time's running out.
Yeah. I was thinking, when is she going to throw it in?
I should have thrown it in when we were talking about your music. That would have been perfect.
you missed that.
So what was it? Finesse.
Finesse the flow.
Finesse the flow.
Finesse the flow.
It's all about, it's a musical sense of just making things sound better and more, you know, just going with it instead of going, you know, against it, just letting it go. Especially when you're with an improv. I think it came from an improv.
Yes, that's right. We're talking about improv. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's why it came back in.
Yeah. And that's how it sort of like came in, and I'm like, you just have to finesse the flow. That was great. Mm. I think that's what we call the night.
Yeah.
Finesse the flow by strike a chord. And it's all about improv, right? So, so your next album, when do you have a date lined up? Or
I've got a date for the single launch. Mm-hmm. That'll be 16th of November at the Wesleyan.
At the Wesleyan?
Yeah.
I've played at the Wesleyan. We've played at the Wesleyan.
Yes, we have.
And you're going to hopefully play.
Yes, that's right.
I might have to come.
Yeah, that'd be good. And then the full album probably February or March next year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you planning on doing any sort of a tour for the album or anything like that?
Well, I've sort of started to, lock in a few venues. But I was thinking of doing something in New South Wales, like, you know, sort of, like inner Sydney, there's the South Sydney Folk Club and a few other venues that sound good. But Yeah, I have to get moving on that because I think they book like 6 months in advance. Yeah.
Actually, yeah. There'd be a lot of people that would – have you tried regional?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got something. Yeah, I sort of started booking a few things, but look, I haven't lined it all up properly. I've got something at the Palais Hepburn.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got a show lined up in February.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a long way away.
Yeah, it's because – well, they're booked up until – the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I wonder how I got in. That was because I sort of.
Oh, when did you book it?
Well, only about a month ago.
Oh, I booked it about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, oh yeah.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Oh wow. You got
so
in.
They must have just booked up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But it depends on what night as well. You're going in on a Friday or Saturday?
A Friday night. Yeah.
Yeah. We wanted a Saturday. Mm. So that's probably why.
So what's your band called?
It's my ensemble, the Valentino Flamenco Ensemble.
Okay.
So we're heading up there in February.
Yeah.
But I've actually seen another show up there. It's a nice little place. Have you been there before?
No.
You haven't?
No, but I've seen their Instagram live feeds when they, you know, have shows on a Friday night.
You'll love it.
Yeah. It looks like a beautiful
thing. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Like it looks like a really nice stage. And
it's like a cabaret.
Because people eat.
And it's a really like a really good stage and everything like that. And it's a bit laid back where people can actually listen and have something to eat and everything like that.
And but it's a big room, isn't it?
It is a big room. Yeah. It is a big room. Yeah. But it's big, but it's like big and intimate at the same time because you can like engage with the audience, which is a good thing if that's your thing.
Mm.
But yeah, it's quite a nice venue. They've got their sound engineer and everything like that. They've got everything there. You just go in there and put your stuff in play.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that one.
Anywhere else?
So I've got that, and I've got what else have I got? Well, I've got Wednesday night. I'm playing an acoustic at Lomond Acoustica.
Okay, I'll be coming along.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. So that's going to be a fun one. And then I've got Palais. Oh, and then I'll be playing Selby Folk Club, but probably not until May.
Okay.
Because they also book way ahead, but they messaged me recently and just said that.
Nice.
Yeah, something in May. So,
Beautiful.
Oh, and Malden Folk Festival. Forgot about that one.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
in November. You're back there, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. It's only folk. Sometimes these festivals like to delve into other sort of genres. It's like some of these jazz festivals, they turn into world.
Like the Blues Fest, I think.
The Blues Fest, they turn into a little bit of a rock fest and a little bit of this. So.
Yeah.
But it's good that they hold their, tradition.
Mm-hmm.
The album that you're putting together, same sort of theme with the environment and everything like that, or is it going to be totally different?
You know what? I suddenly realized I was looking at it and because trying to see, what's the link between all these songs.
Yeah.
And I think there might be one with a little bit of an environmental thing, but there's a lot of love songs. And it's like,
good.
How did that? I don't know how that happened. Well, I didn't know that many love songs.
Well, if it comes naturally, I think that's the main thing.
Yeah.
Love songs, always. Everyone can relate to love songs.
Yeah.
So
you play on one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're playing flute or violin?
Flute on the two songs. They sounded really beautiful. I'm excited to hear the full album. It's for a way away.
Yeah, it's going to be a way away.
But the single will be. Which single will you be releasing?
Probably Wattlebird, which you've heard before. A lot of people will have heard it before, but they won't have heard it like this. So,
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Same audio engineer, same studio, same...
No, different engineer.
Okay.
The last one was fantastic, but I just sort of thought I'd try something different.
Yep.
So this is with Miles Mumford at Rolling Stock Studios.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, but it'll be the same person mastering.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Azum, I think his name is. I can never pronounce his surname. But
Well done. Kate, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you along and have a bit of an insight into your world of folk and everything like that and your inspirations. Thanks so much. And we wish you all the very best with your album.
Thank you.
And your gigs and everything like that. I'm sure I'm going to come to a few of them. So, Yeah, hopefully you get many more, and you have, you know, a lot of success with your album and everything like that. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Pleasure. It was fun. Thanks, Emma.
Yeah. Oh, our pleasure. Yeah.
Until next time. Ciao. Strike A Chord Podcast, presented to you by ValentinoFlamenco.com and AmlaMusic.com.